Welcome and blessings. This is Anne Kate Sullivan serving today as one of the Superpower Up hosts, and you're listening to Wisdom of the Ages. I have recorded many interviews with spiritual teachers, authors, and positive influencers around the world. And my main theme is inviting in a new paradigm of peace, love, and harmony. And you can find out lots of episodes on superpowerexperts.com/wisdomoftheages. So today I decided to do a monologue on spiritual awakening. I want to tell you a bit about my story of becoming and how true nature has revealed itself to me over a period of time. So I believe that there are five main paths to becoming free, to spiritual awakening. And on my show, many people have gone into one or many of these paths, but today I'm going to talk about five. The first one is education, which I believe is really important, and I'll get into it in a minute, but really education is about learning to ask questions so that we grow and learn. It's about becoming curious. Two is nature. Because nature, when we spend time in nature, can really open us up to our true nature if we do it correctly, if we enter into the natural world with awareness. The third path is really through the spiritual teacher, the guru, the person who's a little bit further ahead on the path. There are all kinds of traps with that too, and people quite often don't like to go to a spiritual teacher, but I found it to be quite helpful. Of course, what I'm really interested in is direct knowing, but sometimes a spiritual teacher can just quicken us on our path. And when we've established direct knowing, we don't need the teacher anymore. And that spiritual teacher might drop away, but we would always love that person. A spiritual teacher is someone we really have to fall in love with in order for it to be effective. So four is selfless service or karma yoga. That's seva. I like to call it seva. It's really where we just give out of the generosity of our own hearts to others. And I'll go into that a little bit more. And then the fifth path might be the most important path for me, but that's the path of inquiry. And I'll talk a little bit about self-inquiry and also dialectic inquiry, where we find out our true nature with a partner. That's really great for relationships. So anyway, so in this episode, I'm going to tell a few stories about how each of these paths helped me open up in a way. And perhaps, you know, in my storytelling, you might think of your own moments of awakening, or it might stimulate some awakenings for you. So keep in mind that everyone is already enlightened. We're already self-realized. It's already happened. It's our true state. It's just that beliefs and events and cultural programming and other things get in the way. And so what we really have to do is take those things off. It's really about taking away what keeps us from living in a state of freedom or liberation. So I'm going to take an ad break. And when we come back from the break, we're going to continue to spiritual awakening, how you can break free. If you want to check out my teachings, you can look at my website, annkatesullivan.com. My first name is A-Y-N, and then it's C-A-T-E-S-S-U-L-L-I-V-A-N, annkatesullivan.com. And I do some work called Shimmer, which is really where you start to feel your own radiance, your own inner light. And then I have a lot of books you can check out too, Legends of the Grail. And then I have a bunch of fairy tales that are super fun. And they really are about the shimmer. They, you know, really finding that wonderful light and joy and happiness with inside. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome, everyone. This is Anne Kate Sullivan, host of Wisdom of the Ages. So we're continuing to talk about spiritual awakening. So before we get into these five paths, I want to just tell a personal story so you can follow along. Now, you might ask why someone who says they're more identified with spiritual essence and ego has a story to tell, and that's really good. What I have to say about this, just this one thing I want to say is your ancestors, and when the ego has really transformed into a pearl, into more of an essence, and you really have more of, you have memories and you're alive, you're living with people, you're interacting, but the feelings you have are quite neutral. So there's a very quiet mind, there's a lot of joy, there's a lot of love, and there's a lot of curiosity. So how do you get here? You know, how does this point of existence out of which we operate, you know, how does it work as this, as something that's a creative flow, right? Today, what I want to do is invite you into the nothing and into love. So an in-breath and out-breath of nothingness and love. The spiritual path is really quite an amazing paradox. So the first thing that I want to talk to you about is insanity, or one of the first things. And the reason I want to discuss it with you is that so many people, when they start having a spiritual awakening, think they're going crazy. And, you know, when the higher mind starts to switch on, it is a little bit different. You're not operating out of the same paradigm anymore. And so a lot of people, when they have a Kundalini awakening or, you know, some sort of awakening, they become frightened and they actually shut it down. Fear, just so you know, fear is a very low vibration and fear shuts things down. So when you find yourself contracting or moving into fear, become curious. That's actually the antidote. You know, you can do a gestalt. A gestalt is when you speak to yourself, two chairs, you speak back and forth, or you can get a journal out and write it down. Find out what the message of the fear is, but you are not fear. And really, fear is an illusion. And as long as you know that, you can't be controlled by it. I mean, ultimately, we'll go into this later, but you know, we are not our ego. We're not our persona, and we do not die. So we're going to go into that. So really, if you know that, it's very hard to be controlled. So some people feel depressed, suicidal. They hear voices. They see auras. They feel the earth energies. It can be confusing. So if you feel like you're cracking apart or dying, don't worry. This is part of the spiritual awakening. But if you're feeling sort of negative, confusing things, I really want to encourage you to find a support team, because awakening by yourself can happen if you're in a cave out in India or something, but it's very hard. It's much better to really have a support team around you of people who understand what's going on and can midwife you through the process. So there are lots of people on my show that are great. I've got Dr. Mitch Fleischer, who's really good with supplements and medications and dietary changes, and Gabriel Cousins, who has a whole awakening program, amazing holistic liberation program that's incredible, and many, many other people on the show. So you can find a great team right here. Anyway, years ago, when I was living in England, this was in the mid-1980s, I for a period where I became quite depressed. And I went to a health food store and I asked if anyone knew a healer. And I was given the name of a woman, and I called her. A lot of people say great things about her. So I called her up, and she doesn't like to have her name mentioned. So I'm not going to say who she is. But what I recognized in her straight away was that this was not about the ego. She was absolutely committed to selfless service. She spent a lot of time in cancer wards and homeless shelters, almost a Mother Teresa type character who was really committed to helping humanity and really some of the most difficult parts of humanity. I would go with her places, and she was so cheerful with different people who were dying. And I was very puzzled about it for a while. And I asked her how she could be so cheerful. And she said to me, "Oh, there's no such thing as death there." So I really had to start thinking about this, and working with her over a period of time, I started to understand that, yes, the body dies, this is true, but our essence is eternal and lives on forever. So I have an episode with William Peters called Conscious Dying, and you can listen to that. So I'm not going to go into that so much here, but it's, I think when we really get that there's a flame, and some people say it's located two finger widths below the navel and two finger widths inside, there's this star, this incarnational star that is really, truly who you are. That's the part of you that goes on from lifetime to lifetime without changing. So when you really get in touch with that, which is why it's so good to do meditation practices, when you really get in touch with that star, then you can start to open up to this infinite self. And there's a lot of space in the infinite self. If you talk to Gabriel, he would talk about dying into the nothing, which is a different conversation. But anyway, let me talk about healing touch for a minute. So when this woman touched me, I suddenly realized that she was tapped into an intelligence, a loving conscious intelligence that really understood like every hair on my head, every breath I took, every thought I had. And it was so wonderful to know, first of all, that someone cared deeply and that I wasn't alone. You know, I was really part of something that was living and breathing and moving. And I would go back and forth I went to see her for about 10 years, and I would really go back and forth between so feeling quite depressed and then feeling this attunement and alignment, until finally the attunement and alignment was really more where I lived. And that's what a true spiritual healer will do. They'll help you stabilize and understand that you are part of this cosmic intelligence, this wonderful creation. Now, our cultural matrix does not teach that. So there's a little bit of work to be done as we shift out of the cultural matrix into direct knowing. And yeah. So at that time it was like the mid-1980s, and I got really into the New Age movement. I was super excited about it, and I was sure that the shift was coming and the domination over others would end, and we'd all join up at a rainbow table, and we'd each hold a crystal and be in touch with our star selves. And well, a lot of time has gone by since then, and I've started to realize that there are a few issues. There are a few things that keep us from the new paradigm. I actually believe we are beginning to live into the new paradigm, so it is still birthing itself, but in order to the New Age movement, I just love Sir George Trevelyan and some of the teachers at Findhorn community and at Esalen and so forth. But you know, if we're really going to wake up, I believe it's good to have a spiritual tradition behind you too, because you can get caught up in all kinds of new illusions, of astral based illusions or drug induced illusions or so forth. And there's actually a true way to awaken where this is actually the state that you're living in, that you don't rely on a guru or a drug or anything to keep you in that state. So true awakening, again, I'm going to get back to self-inquiry in a little bit, but you know, when you really do self-inquiry and you dissolve the structures that keep you from understanding your own true nature, then that's the real work, as far as I'm concerned. So there's some things that get in the way, you know, and we've all heard it. Like one of the main structures that gets in the way is the ego. Now, what is the ego? Well, the ego, you know, most of us have an ego, and it's designed for a reason. There's a reason we have it. We're experiencing ourselves as separate individuals. And The problem is that we're not really separate individuals. We're just having the illusion of the experience of it so that we learn and grow. But you can get really identified with that and think that you're really different than everybody else. And that person's this and this person's the other. And I mean, you can see it on the planet right now, you know, races and genders and presidential, whatever, you know, like you can really get into division. And the ego loves that, because as long as you're identified with the ego and duality and division, you do not wake up. You stay asleep. And, you know, we could just continue to perpetuate stories of pain and suffering and false labels and all sorts of things. So the ego, yes, the ego is a problem. And of course, what we need to do is become aware of it. So as we become aware of it, as we become aware of this structure, this wonderful structure that helps us understand that we're different from that person, and yet at the same time, the spiritual paradox is there is no difference. We are all one. So again, we're essentially free. We've just got, you know, there's just a lot of clutter. You know, there are thoughts and beliefs and social media and untruths. And in this mix of all this information that's thrown at us, meditation is great. You know, we can really drop into deep meditation. We can sense our arms and legs. Like one of the most powerful practices you could do is just quiet the mind and sense your arms and legs. You can just be the vessel. Ah, it's such a wonderful thing. You can even practice that right now. Just sense your arms and legs. You can even put it on your iPhone, like every day, just sense your arms and legs. And just feel the spaciousness of your mind. The spaciousness, not the thoughts. The thoughts come and go. But what's behind that? So if you gaze at the flame burning on a candle, you might get a little closer to the truth of who you are, right? It's a great practice just to get a candle, light it, just gaze at the flame. So I'm going to say this too. The spiritual path is not for the faint of heart. So most people do not set out on a spiritual path because they're happy and cozy and everything is fine. No, it's usually because they're suffering so much that there isn't any other choice. And now I know some people are born simply wide awake and they get it from the start, and that's super. And I think a lot of children are coming in right now, the indigos and crystals and so forth that are coming in. And they're awake. But for me, that wasn't the case. No, I fell into about every hole you could find, and I shook my hand vehemently at God. And after a while, I realized that actually God wasn't the issue, that I was entangled in my own complexity, and that it was my job really to untangle my own Gordian knot. And that has taken, I guess, you know, 3 decades. But as I speak to you today, I'm feeling quite free. I know that there's a lot of upset and unrest and pain and suffering in the world. And that's why I have really felt it's important to speak and to start doing these monologues. Because you see, it really doesn't have to be this way. You know, we can all become free. We can actually literally right now choose to step into a new paradigm. Like we can't change other people, but what we can do is we can change ourselves, right? Trying to change another person. Everyone knows this. You're in a relationship and, you know, the relationship would work if that other person would just change. And I'll tell you, I've been married for 16 years to a wonderful enlightened yogi, and he's very free, but I will never try to change him. I learned that one. I mean, all we can really do is reflect back and forth to each other the truth of who we are until we both stand in that truth. And that's the love we can give each other. That's the true relationship. It's not that we need to go out and find the beloved. Everybody wants to find their soulmate and their twin flame and all this. And really, it's wonderful, but really love is found inside. And once you find that love within, inside, and once you're established in self-love, then you can share that love with another who has gone through a similar process and is established in self-love and would like to share that. So that's important. I'll do another podcast on the beloved sometime, because that's a huge piece. And I know people can really suffer around that. But you know what? Your heart, just put your hand on your heart and feel the love that's there, and allow the jewels that live in your heart to start to awaken, because that's what we're looking for, is already right here. So one of the main structures that keeps us from a state of self-realization is known as the superego. So it's a part of the ego, but it's a specific part. It's called the inner critic. And this voice has shame and guilt and negativity. You can hear it sometimes really clearly. Oh, you stupid idiot, you shouldn't do this. Right? I remember my husband saying one time that he threw the, my husband's John Patrick Sullivan. Anyway, he's a former football player, and he's now a yogi. Anyway, he threw his towel and missed a hook. And he heard someone say, you stupid idiot, you can't even throw a towel onto a hook, right? And then he realized that was actually literally the voice of the superego. He was like, wow. So, you know, once we recognize it and that voice comes at us, that voice needs to go. I mean, that is the part that we actually like literally need to kick out and defend against. And of course, that the superego and inner critic and other people, really, we just need to defend against, because it doesn't help. It does not support our spiritual awakening. Obviously, we have to be discerning. And the point of the superego is to teach us what's right and wrong, good and bad, and so forth, to be discerning so we don't get run over by a bus or, you know, do anything stupid. But the thing is, at a certain point, especially by the time you get to 40, we don't need that voice anymore. It just gets in the way. And so we really have to be good at kicking it out. Like I said, I'm going to repeat it. The superego or inner critic is the main structure that blocks self-realization. So when you find yourself feeling guilt and shame and negativity, think about it. What did you do that, you know, might have been off track? Okay, learn the lesson, get it, that's fine. Don't do it again. Fail forward, do it a little bit better, and let it go, you know? So over time, that voice can become quite, I hopefully eventually completely disappears. It definitely becomes much more subtle in my personal experience. And at that point, you can become really creative. You can speak, you can write, you can do all the things that you've really wanted to do. You can share, you can love, you can, you know, life becomes really juicy. So it is great work. I mean, one of the best books I know to read on it is Byron Brown's Soul Without Shame. Brilliant book. Another piece of work that's really important is ancestral trauma. And I think it's one piece that's really coming to the surface now with all the things that are going on in the world. And so, you know, as the ego sort of becomes more of a precious pearl and the superego melts, then you realize that there's still other layers in our culture, ancestral traumas, and they have to do with wars and different things that have happened, you know, the slavery, all sorts of terrible things humans have done to each other over the centuries. And that's just work we have to do until it's clear. So we tend to carry the wounds of our parents and grandparents. So we, you know, those wounds go back seven generations and forward seven generations. And what's great is when we heal these ancestral patterns, then seven generations in the past and the future are also healed. So that's really amazing. It's really important work. And I'm going to do some episodes on this later, but definitely check that part out. Forgiveness work is really important. It's an Ho'oponopono. It's very straightforward. You can do all sorts of levels with it, but basically the idea is I forgive you Please forgive me. Let's forgive each other. Let's let it go. Let's live in peace and love. I'll repeat that. I forgive you. Please forgive me. Let's forgive each other and let it go. Let's live in peace and love. Third time, I really want you to get this one. I forgive you. Please forgive me. Let's forgive each other and let it go. Let's live in peace and joy and love and harmony and a new paradigm, right? So it doesn't mean when we forgive someone, that doesn't mean that what they've done is okay. It just means that you're not carrying the pain and suffering around. You're not carrying the burden, the luggage that goes with it. You get that it's not right, but you're going neutral. You're choosing neutrality. So we know what gets in the way. Ego, superego, fear, beliefs, negative emotions, ignorance, the cultural matrix. Also artificial intelligence being psyoped, but that's another show too. Let's get to what opens it up, because this is more fun. So I said there are five paths to liberation that I know of, and there are probably many, many more. I mean, I think each religion really has as a way. Maybe you can get entangled too, but you can feel, you can discern which path is taking you into higher and higher states of consciousness. I mean, definitely Christ consciousness is a path of liberation, but that's not what I'm going to talk about today. So we've spoken about education and the fact that the real purpose of education is to learn to inquire and ask questions. My father used to say, we are a lamp to be lighted, not a vessel to be filled. It was really great. And he started the school that we went to, which was all about really self-inquiry from the beginning. So when we ask questions, we don't do it so we can answer them necessarily. We ask questions so that we can learn and grow. And this curiosity is what leads us to spiritual awakening. So if you're in an educational model that shuts down curiosity, that is not true education, right? It's not about rote learning. It's about inquiry. So I love it when Buddhist nun Thamma Shedron says, we must learn to fail, fail better, and fail forward. It's really great, something great. It takes the challenge out of the path in a way. So all we have to do is stand back up again, she says, spit the sand out of your mouth. I kind of like that. Just the wave knocks you over, spit the sand out of your mouth, get up, keep going. Standing up again is what matters. So the first step in breaking free of the old paradigm and the constraints of the ego and the persona have to do with the courage of asking questions about anything. And I'm going to give you a big hint. We are not our thoughts. And hint two, we are not our emotions. So I remember one time doing this meditation where I explored 12 extreme states of emotions. And then I laid down on the floor and I said, wow, for a very long period of time. Because in that wow, I started to feel my authentic self. I wasn't my fear, right? I wasn't any of those things that I was identified with up until that point. I was not my story. It didn't matter what anyone thought of me because there was no self. What? So generally, the self that we take ourselves to be is, get this, the self that we take ourselves to be is a case of mistaken identity. We are not what we think we are. So we are not our fear or our anger or insanity. Our true nature is joy and strength and love. We are not our depression or our illnesses. We might experience those things. They might happen. But the way through them, it's not to deny them that it's not happening. We're not doing a spiritual bypass. When we are depressed, it's our soul speaking to us. So we have a conversation with the soul. Oh, what's going on? Why is there a contraction and a limitation? So we engage, we get our journal out, and we engage with the soul. Yes, we have a soul, and yes, we can engage in conversation with it because it's really ourself, right? So we can learn to listen to any of these things, any fear, depression, illness, anything that's there, you can talk to it. You can feel it. Where is it in your body? What does it taste like? What does it smell like? And these can act as portals to the soul. It's amazing. They can open up. Anger can open to strength, and fear can open to joy, and hatred can open to power, true power, right? And ultimately peace. True power is peace. Insecurity can open to steadfastness. Loneliness can open to self-love, right? So if we ask the right questions, then my goodness, the world can open up in the most beautiful ways. And that's where the spiritual path begins. So if I'm not my personality, if I'm not my thoughts or my feelings or my history, then who am I? That's where it all begins. Who am I? Who am I? So I've spoken quite a bit in other episodes about color and how that was my entryway into spiritual awakening. And you can check that out on my website. It's aynkatesullivan.com, AynkatesSullivan.com. And you can click on teachings or color or color glossary. But you know, another way that we can start to open up is to make flower essences. So for a while I made flower essences with a woman who had trained with Edward Bach, who made they call it batch there, but the Bach flower remedies, we generally say. And you know, when you feel like, let's just say take a rose and you make a essence, basically you're taking a flower and you're asking for the intelligence of the flower, usually with a flower, to go into a bowl of water. And you put this water in the sunlight, and the pattern, the sacred geometry of the water is moves into the water. And there's a whole thing on flower essences. But what's really incredible about it is when you begin to feel when you actually sense the essence of a rose, it's a very, very high vibration. Flower essences are one of the things that can really, like, literally start to open you up to very high states of spiritual awareness. They're beautiful, very subtle. They won't make you do anything, but they can really open up. They invite in these higher states. So when you feel that rose essence outside of you and you're like, oh my goodness, this is really the essence of unconditional love, then you can start to feel that within your own heart and within your own consciousness. So that's why I say nature really can be this path to awakening, because every plant you encounter has a medicine. Everyone, the oak tree, I mean, the druids used to travel through the oak trees to the other worlds. You know, so there's a whole tradition of just traveling to the other worlds through different sacred trees, guardian trees. But just like going outside and just, you can just start by listening to the bird singing, looking at the beautiful flowers that are around you, listening to the bees humming. They have a frequency. The hum has the frequency of life. When nature really starts coming online for you, it's a very good sign that you're probably in some sort of spiritual awakening. Now, nature reflects what's already true inside of you. And that's why when we can go out and walk in nature and really be silent, we can be touched in very deep ways. It can erase a lot of pain and suffering, and you can really start to tap in to the essence, the truth of who you are. And my fairy tales all come from that. I have a whole series of sparkle fairy tales that I love. They're very sweet and they're for children, but really children of any age. And it was specifically the story of Kachina's rose came from the my experience with a healing rose. Anyway, I mean, just like walking in old stone circles. I've done two shows now episodes with Rory Duff, who talks about how the ley lines are opening up and how the old stone circles are on. And then I've done some work recently dowsing the ley lines, the type 4 and 5 ley lines in Virginia and then throughout the Appalachian Mountains that are really coming online now. And it's happening all over the world. So So the earth itself is shifting in frequency. Like we've never had until I think 2017, no one ever read type five ley lines. So these are like major meridians that are opening up. And so they're not even inviting, they're kind of forcing the higher mind to come on in humanity. So at this point, I'm not even sure whether the shift is a choice. I think it's what's happening, and it's really how gracefully we can go along with it. You know, the cosmic rays are very strong, the earth energies are very active, and of course that has an impact on our own bodies, minds, souls, and our culture also. So I'm not going to go so much into Celtic shamanism, although I really, really love it. And I've written a whole series of books called Legends of the Grail, where I work with 13 nature deities, and you can go and read them. It's on Amazon and it's Audible, and I have a novel that's out called Nimue Freeing Merlin, which is about the alchemy of freeing your own soul. So you can check those out if Celtic shamanism and nature is your path to self-realization. But I want to get to the third point, which is spiritual teachers. The very first spiritual teacher I met, I mean, apart from the healer, but the first guru I met was Mother Mira. I went to Germany and I met her there, and I didn't know anything about gurus. I was actually working at a university. I was trying to be very sane and normal, and meanwhile, True Nature had another plan for me. And so I went with some friends to see Mother Mira, and I thought, you know, sitting in this room in silence at first was just ridiculous. I couldn't handle it, and I was just feeling a lot of pain and suffering and just terrible memories, and I just wanted to get out of there. And I got ready to stand up, and somebody there said to me, "Oh no, this is just your, she's doing a purification, just stay with it, and when you're ready, go get a darshan." And the darshan in her case is when she gazes into your eyes, she get because you know she's going to help free you from your karma. And I thought, well, why not? So I went up to Mother Mira, and I gazed really quite steadfastly into her eyes. I was sort of almost like a challenge. I was like, okay, show me something. And she gazed back with such love that I melted. I just like literally melted, and the love flowed through her eyes down my spine like a golden elixir. And went all the way through. It activated my kundalini, so the energy in the spine that sits there in the base of the spine, and boom, I had a major kundalini activation and could feel the layers of history and story, and so it just taken off, and I just felt bliss. It was incredible. It was like a first taste of samadhi. Where I just tasted this incredible joy, and I just blinked and stepped back. I couldn't believe it, and I actually stayed in that state for several hours. And my friends were, I think they were a little worried about me. They took me out to ride bumper cars. I was just laughing and laughing. And anyway, we rode bumper cars, and so I sort of the ego remade itself again. And then of course I just wanted to have that experience again. I was like, why did you put me in a bumper car? I could have just stayed in that state of samadhi and freedom. But it was a taste, and I realized then that I had a lot of work to do, that I had to untangle this Gordian knot, and different people were going to have different keys to it. So I went to many, many different teachers after that. I was with Amichi. The Hugging Saint Amichi is amazing, just to feel that her great embrace and the fact that she, I mean, such selfless service. You know, she just hugs people all over the world and just eats their karma. It's amazing what some of these people can do. And then there's some people that claim they do this and they're fake, and they get caught in money, sex, and power. And you always have to look at that. Like the three ways you can fall, anybody, is really money, being greedy, wanting too much, sex, having sex with your students, or it's not okay. This is just should not happen, period. And power is, power over dominating, taking people's power. These things are not okay. So those are just always our sort of discernment when we're working with part of groups. Like, we don't do that. If someone's too expensive, walk away. If so, if charging something is fine, something somebody can handle, because it's fine. We need to give an exchange of energy. That's fine. But gouging people's not okay. And I've heard all kinds of terrible stories about that that I won't go into. There's way, way, way too many times that gurus and spiritual teachers have lured their students into sexual behavior. And first of all, a spiritual teacher should not be able to be bought, period. You should not be able to buy your spiritual teacher. If you can, that's not a spiritual teacher. If someone does not have clear boundaries around sex, that's really off. You need very clear boundaries. It's not you're not there to seduce your students. That's a huge trap that a lot of people fall into, especially in the tantric community. And that's not okay. And that just stops the whole, you just create a lot of pain and suffering. So that's not good. And power over is the whole problem with the planet right now, is power over. So it's not about that either. What we're doing, what a spiritual teacher should be doing, is assisting you in becoming free. Yeah, so if, and if they're a really good spiritual teacher, they're going to tell you when you don't need them anymore, and they're done, and you're done, because then you move on either to your own direct knowing, or you might need another spiritual teacher for a while, or maybe some combination. So Amichi, actually at a certain point, did I think it was maybe 10 years, but she did say it was time for me to carry on my own. And I was a little devastated at the time, but I do understand. It's like you have to make room for somebody else. It's once you understand, once you got the picture, make room for another person who's next in line. So anyway, but I love her, and I love the work that she does in the world. Also, Gabriel Cousins is another amazing, pure spiritual teacher who, every time I'm with him, I feel like I'm just taken to the next level. He just always raises me up. And actually, the first time he gave me Shaktipat is called the divine kiss, and it's when a person who has that lineage, a Muktananda lineage, touches you, and you feel aligned with God or the divine. So he's a rabbi. He uses but he's all sorts of things, but he teaches the path of holistic liberation. And the first time he gave me Shaktipat, it actually like literally burned my body. It looked like someone had taken red magic marker and had drawn up my spine and snakes all the way up to my head, and it kind of freaked me out. But he said, "Oh, well, that's interesting. The first time I had Shaktipat with Muktananda, the same thing happened." So Kundalini is a real thing. We think of it as energetic. But just if you study Chinese medicine and you start to understand meridians, or you start to understand geomancers and the energies that run in the earth. So energy, we're actually made of energy. And so when it can heat up, and it can have a pretty enormous impact. And there is such thing as Kundalini crisis. And again, if you go into a Kundalini crisis, you need a spiritual team to help you with that. It does happen, and it can happen. Well, anyway, just find your team if that's what's going on with you. So anyway, so I've been blessed to be around many spiritual teachers from many walks of life. I'm so grateful to all of them, really to all of them. And I'm so happy that I've been able to be involved in some selfless service, hopefully some more. I mean, it's something any of us can do. I do want to mention too that 12 steps is something Alcoholics Anonymous was really a very high spiritual path, helps us get clean on all levels. There's a 12 step for everything you can think of, from alcohol to drugs to sex to love to codependency to being a shopaholic or whatever, the 12 steps are, it's a very, very high program. It starts with turning your life and will over to God, you know, and as soon as you do that, miracles really start happening. And that's available for free for everyone. So remember that, and don't be ashamed to go into the programs. They're like amazing. They're miraculous. They work. You find a group of people who are free and who want to help. And it's really cool that the 12 steps is all over the, I don't know if it's the world, definitely all over United States and Europe. So engaging in selfless service, I joined a group for a while with the laying on of hands with people who were quite ill, mostly cancer patients who were ill, and we did the laying on of hands. And they were so grateful. It was really beautiful work. I wish there was more of that, actually. I became a minister so I could do counseling. And then later I got my degree in spiritual psychology. But just being able to speak to people who are ill or hungry or dying or confused, it's just important to spend time with people who need you. You know, especially the dying. Their hospice work is incredible selfless service. You know, there's an art to helping people cross consciously without fear, and with love, you know, with total awareness, with understanding that they're just shifting dimension. And, you know, you can call people in from the other side. You can really help them with this process. And I have an episode with William Peters called Conscious Dying that you can listen to. He's got a program called Shared Crossings, and it's great. It's really great work. So again, this helps clear your karma. And then when you get to this next part, which is really about the death of the ego, your own melting, your transformation, everybody's like, oh, death sounds terrible, death of the ego, because it's actually more like the melting of the ego or the shape-shifting of the ego. But there's definitely a transformation because, you know, at a certain point, you really become less and less identified with the personalities and the story, and you start to understand that they are zeros operating. They're nothing operating as something. The ego has a really hard time with that because we're taught to be someone, to have a 10-year plan, to do all this stuff. But really, as we empty out, we make room for consciousness to operate through us. And it's incredible, and it's exhilarating, and it's unifying, and it's love. I mean, that's the new paradigm, right? Getting out of the way and allowing this to happen. So finally, I'm going to finish today talking about self-inquiry. And I know I've gone on for quite a while, but I hope you're still enjoying this and that this matters to you. So self-inquiry is free. It's another one. Like anyone can do it. You start as a child. Who am I? You know, and then you learn. Oh, I'm Bob, and I'm a boy, and I'm right. So there's something that starts the formation of the ego, and that's really important. Like you don't want to stop the formation of the ego in children. You want them to be ego identified. You want them to actually. It's hard. But when they remember this process when they're 9 and they get that they're the ego and they turn off the world of the fairy folk, and it's kind of sad that they leave that world, that mythical world, not all of them, but quite a lot do. And then when they're 12, they reject you, and you know, you might have been like God before, but after that, you're just really something to reject. It's difficult as a parent. But you watch, it's actually fascinating at the same time to watch how this is being structured. I remember saying to my daughter, like, I want you to completely and utterly reject me so that you can understand who you are. She was like, well, that's no fun. But anyway, that process of individuation is really important. We have to go through that process of individuation. And then at a certain point, we start to feel alone. And as though we're not connected, as though we can't love. And that's the point where we shift back to essence. So again, the spiritual path is full of paradoxes. Most people do that around 40. These days, everything's sped up, so who knows? So I'm noticing some people in their 20s are already going through this. So the point of self-inquiry is that we're developing direct knowing with true nature, God, the divine, Christ consciousness. We're developing direct knowing with the ultimate intelligence, which is in us, around us, and we're not separate from it. So what my husband and I do is we practice dialectic inquiry on most days. And when we don't do dialectic, we do self-inquiry. So self-inquiry, obviously, we're doing that by ourselves with a journal, or sometimes I talk into my phone, or I just do a gestalt where I put two chairs out and I talk to a couple different aspects of the self. So that's self-inquiry. So we're learning, we're asking the main question. There are lots of different self-inquiries, but the main one is, who am I? And as you ask it over and over, and you can do it as a looping with another friend too, who am I? You know, and the other person, you know, who am I? Well, I'm a radiant being of light. Thank you. And then the other person would say, well, I'm really feeling like I'm an empty vessel. Thank you. And then you say, well, I'm feeling, so anyway, so you can go back and forth as you're experiencing the self. So you usually do that for 15 minutes. We usually time it so that, because it could really go on forever, but I like to put timing 15, 20 minutes around these things. So John Patrick and I have been doing inquiry for 16 years, and we've done an episode called From Ego to Self-Realization, which you might like to listen to if you're interested in self-inquiry. But anyway, so let's just talk about the history of self-inquiry for a minute. Let's see, where does it begin? I mean, we could start with Ramana Maharishi was one of the first people that talked about it. Also, the Greeks really talked about the process of self-realization. But the school that we're involved in is called the Ridwan School. And they practice something called the Diamond Approach. And that's what we've really been involved in. It's a great school. You can check it out. It's on, there's a lot online. The main teacher is A.H. Almas, has written a lot of books on the subject. And it's great because when you have a huge community who is actively engaging in the art of inquiry, we really learn a lot from each other. So it's a way that we can really come together as a community and as a group. So, you know, check it out. Karen Johnson is also one of the founding members, and there are many more. I love Space Cruiser Inquiry and a lot of the books that A.H. Almas has written. Anyway, our practice that JP and I do is really to take half an hour, usually in the morning, and we want to take a time where we're not disturbed. We have a timer, and we might just close our eyes for 15 minutes and just focus on our inner peace, our inner stillness and presence. And then we're going to ask each other a question, like what we've been saying on the show is, who am I? So we might ask, who am I? Or we might just ask, well, what's arising now? And the point is that you give one person 15 minutes to speak, and then there's 5 minutes where you might help them deepen the inquiry. So you never blame your inquiry partner for anything, because they're not responsible for who you are or how you feel. That's really, really, really important. If you're getting caught up in that, you need to really do some work on projection and object relations, which is the subject of another podcast. But whatever triggering event is going on with you, if you're in emotional reactivity, it's your work 100% of the time. I'm going to repeat that. If you're in emotional reactivity, that's your work 100% of the time. That's you. Those are your wounds, your triggers. So your inquiry partner can help you inquire into that, into the wound or into the whatever you're experiencing, but you never blame them for how you feel. That's your stuff. So that's one great thing about inquiry. So you can go into your anger, you know, your more negative emotions and inquire into them, or you can also really go into a lot of positive states and inquire into that too. Well, today I'm feeling incredibly joyous and open, and I'm feeling like a bird flying through the air, and it's really incredible. So you just go with whatever's arising. And then you switch, and then the other person has their 15 minutes, and then you have your 5 minutes of just helping them deepen their inquiry. Like, oh, you know, when you said you felt like you were flying, but you put your arms out, and what did you feel under your arms, or what was the experience in your body, right? So you're just deepen that. So both Trick and I help people open up to their own awakening experience in personal sessions. If you go onto my website in katesullivan.com, you can see where I offer sessions. I'm not open to everybody. I'm open to people who are like seriously committed to the spiritual path, and I work with kind of a select group. But if you feel you're one of those people, then get in touch with me, and either I can work with you or JP, or I know other people too. But it's really beautiful work, and it does open up this direct knowing. You know, one other way you can do it is choose a color and inquire into the color. That's how I started the whole process. So, you know, as we're finishing the show, I've gone on almost an hour. So I'm going to finish the show quickly here. I just want to give you a self-inquiry practice. And with this one, you can do with a journal or like two chairs, your gestalt, if you want to, or you can find a friend to do a dialectic inquiry with. And I'm going to give you three questions, and I'll repeat them twice. Number one, what keeps you from spiritual awakening? Think about it. What are the blocks that you still have in your life? What keeps you from spiritual awakening? Number two, why is it good to stay limited, fearful, and small? And you can change that. If like you're feeling angry or some other negative emotion, you can throw it in there. But why is it good to stay limited, fearful, and small? So we're inquiring into why the ego might still have some sort of grip. And then the third and last one is the one we've all been waiting for. How are you experiencing spiritual awakening now? How are you experiencing spiritual awakening now? And you can change that with who am I if you want to, but anyway, here we go. Once again, number one, what keeps you from spiritual awakening? Two, why is it good to stay limited, fearful, and small? And three, how are you experiencing spiritual awakening now? And I'm interested. If you want to let me know, you can send me an email on info@infinitelightpublishing.com. And if I can, I'll respond. So, yeah, you can go on my website, as I've said before, annkatesullivan.com. And you can check out, I have a lot of things on there to listen to. But anyway, we've run out of time. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your wisdom. And may your lives be filled with color, with sound, with consciousness, and many, 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 many questions. So you've been listening to Anne Kate Sullivan, host of Wisdom of the Ages. Until we meet again, may wisdom reveal its secrets to you. One message at a time. Blessings.